The Sunday Play.
We present Barbara Lee Hunt and Andrew Sachs in My Dearest Angel by R.F. Delderfield, adapted for radio by Cynthia Pugh. My Dearest Angel.
One small ornament. A girl with lamb dancing.
China shepherdess. What is the mark, please?
The mark? Oh, kind of cross swords here.
It is mice. And the next?
Baby holding daisy chains.
A baby? A cherub with floral pattern. And on the table, please?
Musical box. Bit of Swiss nonsense, I reckon.
It is German.
It is? Well, then maybe you'll recognize the tune. Listen, Chilling.
Oh, no, no, you must not.
Oh, go on, why not? There's nobody around. Listen. You do know it, then?
Yes, I know it. My mother would sing it sometimes. It is a very old tune.
Hello. Hello. Here, take a look out there. That's their luggage arriving, isn't it? And both of them on the spot to check it. Prince is the pair of them, yet they come trotting down to count their baggage. Come and look.
Oh, he is so noble, so beautiful.
And which of them's a favorite?
Please?
I heard there was an outside chance she was going to marry one of them. Which one?
Oh, but how foolish you are. She will marry the taller, the Prince Albert.
Now, wait, it's not that certain. They were saying in the still room last night it was all a rumor and she won't marry either of them.
Oh, how could she fail to fall in love with him? He is beautiful.
Beautiful? Well, I don't know. He's not bad looking for a foreigner. And there's a lot more to marrying the Queen of England, my girl. I heard his country's about the size of Windsor Park, and he didn't have two farthings to rub together. Now, take it from me, Shilling. When it comes to marrying, it'll have to be a king.
Then why are we so engaged?
Eh?
This ring. It was here that he stayed when he came here 3 years ago.
He did? How long are they supposed to be staying?
That is not our business. Our instructions were to complete the inventory before dusk.
Oh, you're right there.
Someone is coming. Quick, we must be at our work.
Item. 3 volumes of engravings, bound in calf, metal fastenings.
Your Highness.
Your Highness.
These apartments. They're in your charge?
No, Your Highness. They're the responsibility of the housekeeper while Her Majesty is in residence of Windsor.
So, and when she is in London or in a progress elsewhere?
The responsibility is then divided between the Lord Steward and the Chamberlain, Your Highness.
So, but you were engaged in making an inventory of the chattels, were you not?
With respect, Your Highness. This apartment was not in use until 4 days ago, when Her Majesty returned to Windsor from London.
The checking of the items of furniture is a part of your regular duties?
No, Your Highness.
But this is not done regularly?
It has not been done since I took up my duties at Windsor, Your Highness.
Allow me to look at that list. Thank you. Item 506, the Meissen Shepherdess. Yeah. It is the figurine on the center shelf?
Yes, Your Highness.
You will please hand it to me to inspect. You have it listed as Meissen, but it is not Meissen. It is the work of an inferior Dresden factory. You'd better strike out the word Meissen.
As Your Highness instructs.
You have a fondness for this kind of music, Fräulein?
It is on air from my homeland, Your Highness.
You've been home to Germany since you took service with Her Majesty in England?
No, Your Highness.
You are homesick for Bavaria. It is Bavaria, is it not?
Wasserburg, Your Highness.
Wasserburg. I know Wasserburg. It is beautiful at all times of the year. But perhaps you are happy to live in England.
Yes, indeed, Your Highness. I am proud of my position here, Your Highness.
I was in Germany only 3 days ago, but already I am homesick. This organ. It is a fine instrument. You will continue making the inventory. It's very necessary that periodical checks should be made in every household.
Who's that?
The Baroness Lipson, I think, and Lord Melbourne.
We could call it the case of the disappearing prince. Or hunt the suitor.
The Lord Steward is grossly at fault in this instance.
Who is the...
His Highness, madam.
Well.
You too. You may go.
Very good, madam.
Very good, madam.
Ah,
This instrument is much in need of attention. My Lord Melbourne.
Your Highness.
It would not appear to have been played since my visit to Windsor more than 3 years ago.
Accept our deepest apologies for our apparent incivility, Your Highness. The organ is not the only fault in our system here. To be frank, Your Highness, we mislaid you.
The equerry announced your arrival, Your Highness, and we at once assembled at the Sovereign's entrance. The Lord Chamberlain had strict instructions to receive you and conduct your entire party to your suite.
The Lord Chamberlain was not at fault, Baroness.
Then the Lord Steward?
My brother Ernst and our attendants were conducted to our quarters punctiliously on arrival. It was I who turned aside and made my own way here. It was the part of Windsor Castle I remembered with affection, particularly the organ. You see, Lord Melbourne, Princess Her Majesty the Queen graciously allowed me to play the instrument at my leisure. I was not informed that she has since withdrawn her permission.
I am quite sure that Her Majesty will extend the courtesy during your present visit. I believe you've met the Baroness Leighton, former governess, now private secretary to Her Majesty.
Your Highness.
And may I present my own private secretary, Mr. George Anson.
Your Highness.
To be truthful, Her Majesty was not expecting you to arrive until after darkness. But since there is a bright fire here, and since Your Highness recalls this apartment with pleasure, why not make yourself comfortable here for a spell? Mr. Anson, ask the steward to notify His Highness, Prince Ernst, and tell him that our visitors will take their refreshment in here.
No refreshment, my lord.
No refreshment?
I'm the worst sailor in the world, Lord Melbourne. Tomorrow my appetite will return, but today I beg you, no dinner, no supper, until I've made my peace with the English Channel.
The crossing was as bad as that.
Oh, it was worse, my lord.
I know the channel at this season. I'm just such a sailor myself. Baroness, oblige me by presenting my compliments to Her Majesty and tell her that I am with His Highness in the southeast wing, that His Highness has no appetite but prefers to play the organ. Inform her that I will attend upon His Highness personally in the meantime.
Your Highness, my lord.
Anson?
My lord.
Find a housekeeper. Bid I send a servant with a carafe of seltzer water and a touch of lemon, and quick about it. There's a good fellow.
At once, my lord.
Now, sir, come and warm yourself. Yes. The channel and the Dover packet is safely behind you.
You're very kind, my lord Melbourne.
It is 3 years since you were here, I believe.
3 years in recorded time.
Yeah.
Much longer in experience. My own, but far more so on Her Majesty's part.
Oh, come now, that's not so long at your age.
Tis long enough to destroy the fabric of dreams.
You are under the impression Her Majesty does not welcome your visit?
Why should she? It was not Her Majesty who proposed it.
Oh, come, Your Highness. I am aware, of course, that it was arranged a long time ago.
By the parties of the state. By my uncle Leopold and by my father. By those who've set their hearts upon this marriage since we were children. But let us not pretend that circumstances have not changed very dramatically since the proposal was first made, my lord. Or that Her Majesty's inclinations have not changed with those circumstances. When I was last here, each of us had a foreseeable destiny. But her destiny is now a fact, is it not?
And it is to determine your own that you challenge the channel a second time.
How long is a man justified in awaiting his destiny, Lord Melbourne? Coburg is a petty dukedom. It could be swallowed up in one of Her Majesty's counties. Yet in Coburg, we still have pride. But does it seem unreasonable, even to the Prime Minister of a realm as powerful as Britain, that I should seek a decision, and that within days?
The seltzer water, my lord.
Thank you, Shilling. Put the tray there. I will serve you, Sidus.
Very good, my lord.
Now, a reinforcement to the distressed garrison, Your Highness. Seltzer, a touch of lemon. There. That should restore you.
Thank you. You are most kind.
Not at all, Your Highness. We all of us have our problems. No doubt you have heard how graciously this young, inexperienced sovereign has accepted the cares and responsibilities to which he was called at the age of 18 years. And happily those reports are true. She is gracious. She is also warm-hearted, gay, and eager at all times to do what she considers the correct thing by her ministers and people. She is truthful, firm in her decisions, yet willing to listen to the voice of experience. And She has made a very great impression here upon diplomats and ambassadors, upon her ministers and household. All these things are in her favor. Yet none of us must overlook the factor that overrides them all.
And what is that?
She is a woman, with a woman's heart, and a woman's emotional instability. For myself, I've always found it impossible to coerce any woman into making the most trivial decision. How much more formidable, then, is the task of urging upon a queen the necessity of making the most difficult decision of her life.
You're trying to tell me that my cousin is still undecided as regards the suitability of the man?
No, sir. I am trying to tell you that Her Majesty is in a state of hopeless indecision as regards the subject of marriage to anyone, yourself not excepted.
In other words, my royal cousin has made up her mind not to marry at all.
That was certainly my impression I got by last audience. But at least 4 hours ago.
4 hours, you say?
Shortly after midday.
Oh, then it is manifestly clear that she has no intention.
Your Highness, it is very far from clear. May I give you further advice? Informal advice, but as someone who wishes you well.
I should esteem any such advice, my lord.
Go to your suite at once. Change into your newest and most spectacular uniform and return to this apartment unescorted in 15 minutes.
You're serious in this proposal, sir?
I'm very much in earnest, Your Highness.
Very well, my lord. It shall be as you wish. I am so far committed that even such a step as this can scarcely matter.
My lord?
Bates. Conduct His Highness to his suite at once.
Thank you, Lord Melbourne.
Oh, Lord Melbourne. Yes? Lord Melbourne, please. Please do not go, Lord Melbourne. Her Majesty has expressed a wish that you remain here and see her at once. Her Majesty declares
yes,
that...
you may go. Kindly ensure that we are not disturbed. I wish to speak to the Prime Minister alone. You understand? Alone.
Your Majesty, my duty compels me to point out that in no circumstances should you incline towards a hasty decision. There are certain factors...
Listen, I command you to withdraw. We are to remain undisturbed until we have said everything that has to be said.
As you wish, Your Majesty.
You were here alone with him? He has returned to his suite.
With respect, madam, you were very well aware of that before you made up your mind to enter. I earnestly hope you were not listening at the keyhole.
There is no keyhole. Had there been one, I confess I should have been tempted to use it. Why did he come here, to this room, and almost as soon as he set foot in Windsor?
I suspect that you are also aware of the answer to that question, Your Majesty.
Yes, I believe I am. Could we talk as we talked when we began together, Lord Melbourne? I am much in need of someone in whom I can truly confide.
I am at your service, Your Majesty, as always. Now and to the end of my days.
So much has happened since Albert and Ernst and I were together in this room. Since we sat there and played the organ. And afterwards sat at that table and looked at engravings together. It was then that they told me all about their lives in their beloved Rosenau. And that was why he found his way to this room at once, you know. I fear that his doing that has made things much more difficult than they need have been.
And how is that?
It has revealed how deeply he feels about...
About the arrangement?
Yes, the arrangement. But I had no hand in that. I never made a single decision about anything. Until that wonderful morning. The morning they woke me up at Kensington and told me I was queen. And I dressed and came down. And you were there to make it all so pleasant and so easy. You must tell me, Lord Melbourne. You must help me to find the right words, the right formula. I gave no promise to Albert. It was others who half-promised on my behalf. Now, that is the plain truth, is it not?
Yes, I suppose that is the truth, as most reasonable people would see it.
And he is reasonable. He would understand, wouldn't he? He will be able to see how different things are now that I am queen. Now that I am making my own decisions every day.
Why do you find this particular decision so painful, then?
Because I cannot bear to hurt him. To send him away as the prince who came to England to give his heart to a queen who looked at it and then handed it back to him. Could it not be pointed out, impartially and objectively, that there was no general wish on the part of either government or people for the Queen to marry at this stage, and that with a sovereign as young as 20 years, there is no immediacy as regards an heir?
All that is true, ma'am. But perhaps not the crux of the matter.
Then tell me what it is. You are not only my Prime Minister, you are my truest friend. And I am very much in need of guidance and reassurance in this matter.
I fear there is only one source of guidance in a matter such as this.
The welfare of the realm.
No, ma'am. The dictates of the heart.
This is your final and considered opinion?
It is indeed, ma'am.
Then you have very much simplified the situation, Lord Melbourne.
I have.
Why, yes. If I can set aside the obligations of my rank and act as my heart urges me to act, I fancy I shall get through this business with very little trouble to anyone.
That is most encouraging news, ma'am. Will you pay me the compliment of rehearsing the ultimatum you propose to give him?
I shall tell him that in spite of the persistence of our Uncle Leopold and others in the matter of a match between us, I cannot persist in it without the impetus of a deep and abiding love for the man I am to marry. And the fact is, Lord Melbourne, such impetus as there was has long since spent itself. I am not only heart-free, but eager to remain so.
Indefinitely, ma'am?
For at least 3 or 4 years, until my affections are fixed elsewhere, or reasons of state urge me upon a different kind of marriage, perhaps even a loveless one.
You will tell the prince that in so many words.
In an audience I intend to grant him after supper tonight. I think I shall begin by reminding him that any encouragement he derived from his visit here 3 years ago was due to immaturity on my part. That I was a young, impressionable girl with... Who is there? I gave Leighton the strictest instructions we should remain undisturbed.
His Highness Prince Francis Charles Augustus Albert Emmanuel of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha.
Albert. Oh, Albert.
Your most gracious Majesty, allow me to kiss your hand.
A little more to the right, Shilling. Yes, that will do, I think. Personally, I prefer the original picture, but Her Majesty gave implicit instructions that the landscape was to occupy a prominent position in the room.
What is Shilling doing on that step ladder?
She is complying with Her Majesty's instructions, Baroness. You may come down now, Shilling.
Her Majesty's instructions?
Regarding the disposition of furnishings in this suite. Her Majesty instructed me to superintend the changes personally. There they are in writing.
Oh, I see. You may leave us, Shilling.
Very good, madam.
The Queen's artistic taste would appear to be suffering a severe relapse. Where did this amateurish daub come from?
I am told it is a painting of Rosenau, the former home of the Duchess of Kent.
In other words, His Highness Prince Albert's home.
That would seem to be the reason it was specifically selected.
I see. You had conversations with Her Majesty before she went riding before breakfast?
Yes, Baroness. I was with her for a few moments before the grooms brought the horses round.
She paid you the compliment of confiding her immediate intentions?
She had no occasion to. I have eyes in my head.
So?
She is head over heels in love with the prince.
Pah! A young woman of her position, barely 20 years of age. What does she know of love? And what do any of us know of this young man? We respect his lineage. We are told that he devotes himself to ornithology and similar time-wasting pursuits. But for a destiny such as that...
Oh, my dear Baroness, Her Majesty is not much concerned with his vice-regal qualifications. She is in love with a pair of blue eyes, a pair of broad shoulders, and a handsome set of whiskers. At 20, what woman looks further?
But you have no proof of this? He is amiable and personable. She likes to dance, to ride, even to flirt, perhaps. But she is anchored to something a great deal more impressive. All her life, I have been at pains to make her aware of this.
Perhaps you had occasion to instruct her in the works of Shakespeare. The Tempest, possibly.
What has the Queen's infatuation with a German princeling to do with the Tempest?
No more than Miranda had to do with Ferdinand before she set eyes on him. I might call him a thing divine, for nothing natural I ever saw so noble.
It goes on as I so prompted.
Spirit, fine spirit, I will free thee within 2 days for this.
Oh, my lord, I was joking. It was foolish talk.
Spare your blushes, Lady Littleton. Every lady in the court is speculating. And as for the men, I've told all the Windsor grooms are laying odds on the match.
I do not think it becomes any of us to joke about such a subject, Lord Melbourne. We had better leave, Lady Littleton.
Not immediately, Baroness. My audience is for 12 midday, and it is now but 2 minutes past. The punctuality of princes is, after all, a fable.
A private audience with Her Majesty?
My dear Baroness, there is nothing sinister in a monarch and a prime minister conferring in private.
But you have been granted 3 private audiences in 5 days. It has encouraged a flood of gossip.
Gossip? That is a very trivial word. Let us call it wholesome speculation.
Her Majesty the Queen.
I shall not wait to be dismissed like a child sent to bed. Precede me, Lady Littleton. I find this situation intolerable, my lord, and I intend to bring it to Her Majesty's notice at the first opportunity.
Her Majesty the Queen.
Your Majesty.
I am unpunctual again, dear Lord Miller.
On the contrary, ma'am, I myself was somewhat delayed, and a moment ago you would have been entitled to say, I have only just escaped being kept waiting.
Oh, Lord Melbourne, how I envy you. You are never, never lost for words.
It is a common failing with politicians, ma'am.
No, no, I mean it. Truly mean it. You were surprised when I sent for you yet again?
No, ma'am. I must admit that I was not in the least surprised.
I did consider consulting others. Mama, dear Lakeson, and I even began a letter to Uncle Leopold, but to tell the truth...
Ma'am?
This was a moment in my life that I did not wish to share with anyone but you.
Ma'am.
What is it? Have I said something clumsy again? Have I displeased you?
No, ma'am, no. No, indeed not. Rather, something to make me as proud as a peacock.
Well, then, the fact is, I have a good deal changed my opinion as to the possibility of marriage.
I am delighted to hear it, Your Majesty.
But you don't seem surprised. You are surprised, are you not?
As a subject, yes, ma'am. As Prime Minister, I'm not permitted to register surprise.
There is, however, a number of issues about which I should hear your views at once. I should require Parliament to grant my husband £50,000 a year.
Forgive me, Your Majesty, but ought we not to consider the husband before we discuss the settlement?
Lord Melbourne, pray let us understand one another. During the last year, you have repeatedly assured me that Parliament is extremely anxious that I should marry as soon as possible.
That is so, ma'am.
And that anxiety stems from the necessity of an heir?
Quite so, ma'am.
Very well, then. You may take it that we are willing to resolve the situation by marrying Prince Albert of Saxe-Coburg with the least possible delay.
It is accomplished already, then.
Accomplished?
I assume that you broached the matter with His Highness.
Broached it?
Mm-hmm.
My dear Lord Melbourne, I have not even hinted at it. You are first to know, the very first.
You have said nothing to the prince as yet.
Nothing whatever.
Then, ma'am, and again with respect, do you not feel it to be this excellent young man's due to be acquainted with your decision at once?
Why, naturally. And now that I have told you, we can address ourselves to the task of composing the letter.
The letter?
A formal proposal that will set all his anxieties at rest.
This is how you propose to acquaint him of your decision?
How else? Are you telling me it would be improper to commit my acceptance of Prince Albert's suit to paper?
In Your Majesty's case, it would be quite proper. Nevertheless, it would be altogether wrong.
But why?
Because, if I'm not mistaken, Your Majesty, this is no mere alliance. Perhaps it began as one, but please God, it has since burgeoned into something a great deal healthier. To be frank, ma'am, you have lost your heart to this young man. So why should you be afraid to admit it to a subject who, more than any other person in the realm, rejoices in the fact?
Oh.
Forgive me, ma'am. Perhaps I presume. I have advised you on many matters, great and small, but it may be that I am not a fit person to advise you on something as delicate as this. Your mamma, the Duchess, perhaps, or the Baroness Leighton.
I have not yet dismissed you, Lord Melbourne.
Your pleasure, ma'am.
All you say is quite true, Lord Melbourne. I have indeed lost my heart to Albert. But is it unnatural of me that I should want to hide the fact from you of all people? The truth is, I am ashamed.
Ashamed, ma'am?
Ashamed of the weeks and months of temporization. All the half-truths in my letters to my Uncle Leopold. All the excuses made to you whenever the subject of marriage was raised.
You can make light of them now, Your Majesty.
I am not joking, my lord. I ask for nothing more than to share my life with Albert. I am very deeply in love with him. And this has opened my eyes to the faults in my own character. Faults I never would acknowledge before. Now I can see that it would be cowardly to hide behind a form of proposal such as I intended. Will you do me one more service?
Your Majesty.
Send Albert to me yourself, without fuss. Let him come here to this suite, where we were once happy and where I so dismally failed to discover what manner of man he was. Will you do that? And ensure that we have a few minutes quite alone?
With all my heart. And a prayer for the kind of happiness you deserve.
Oh, dear God. Grant me the wisdom to say the right thing to him. This is surely the most difficult moment of my life. Oh, and yet how foolish I am. I'm not going to the scaffold. I am awaiting my dear, dear love. Oh. That little tune. How charming it is. One of his favorites. You may come in, Albert. I'm quite alone.
Your servant, cousin.
You think it indiscreet of me to receive you without a chaperone?
You can do whatever you choose, cousin. You are a queen.
That is so, yes. I could have ridden ahead of the equerries this morning and asked you to follow. I did think of that. And I wish now that I had done so, it would have been easier.
Easier?
To say what I have to say, Albert.
There's no reason why it should be painful for you, cousin. There's no need to say it at all.
Yes, Albert, indeed there is. I could have written it, but Lord Melbourne made me see that to do so would have been cowardly. It would help, I think, if you were to call me by my name. I have always called you by yours. It seemed natural since I always thought of you as Albert. And I did think of you very affectionately after that first visit of yours. I recall now that I thought of you every day.
It is kind of you to say so, Victoria. But I fear it is not strictly true. You've had so many more important things to think about in the last 2 years.
They do not seem very important to me now, Albert.
I do not think there can be anything more important to the Queen of England than her responsibilities as sovereign.
Oh, but I assure you there is. If that monarch is a woman, a girl, that is why we are here together at this moment, alone, Albert.
You have something to say to me? Something particular? I had concluded by now...
Would you have the goodness, Albert, to look beyond me, to look anywhere but straight at me, the way you are doing?
Forgive me. I will look out of the window. There. Is that better?
No, it is not. I thought it might be, but it is not. I cannot see the kindness in your eyes. Albert, you must be aware of the reason I sent for you. You cannot believe I summoned you only to send you away. Albert, dear Albert, it would make me too happy if you would consent to marry me.
Oh, Victoria, beloved, as liebes Frauchen, gutes Weibchen, it has happened.
Oh, my dear, dear Albert.
Oh, this is no occasion for tears.
Yes. Yes, it is of joy and of relief.
Relief?
Why not? Suppose you had rejected me out of hand.
Oh, is there a man who would dare? You could have sent me to the Tower of London, could you not?
Oh, but it is such a relief. You see, I knew you were angry. You never showed it, but I knew you were angry inside. And the moment before you came in just now, I was so afraid of what your pride might make you do for being kept without knowing, when everyone at court knew why you were here.
Oh, it is nothing, nothing. For you, a man must be prepared to wait. And now you must yourself wait a little, that I may accustom myself to the reality of all I see in your eyes and hear from your lips. But I shall succeed. That I do promise you, beloved. I shall succeed in making you as happy as you deserve to be. In body and soul, I shall be your slave. Loyal, true. Treu und fest.
This I know. I think I have always known. You are so tall, Albert, and I so little. But wait, there is a hassock. There. So. Now I am as tall as you.
Das Auge sieht Himmel offen. Es schwelgt das Herz in Seligkeit.
What is that you say?
It's by the poet Schiller. And translated, heaven opens on the ravished eye. The heart is all entranced with bliss. I think Schiller must have known a moment such as this.
Enter!
Your Highness is chocolate.
Ah, His Highness Prince Ernst has taken his...
In his apartment, Your Highness. He instructed me to say that he would join Your Highness immediately.
Fräulein.
Your Highness.
Is this watercolor? It was not here when I found you making the inventory in October.
No, Your Highness. It was one of the items Her Majesty ordered to be placed here immediately after the inventory was checked.
Her Majesty ordered this to be hung here?
Yes, Your Highness. At the time, the organ was curtained. Several additions were made at the time. Would that be all, Your Highness?
You recognize this landscape, Schilling?
No, Your Highness.
It is a painting of my birthplace, Rosenau. A very bad painting, I fear. It does less than justice to Rosenau.
I am sorry, Your Highness.
You're not required to apologize, Schilling. It was not you that painted it, I trust. Touch the spring of the musical box. You may remain and listen to it. Oh, Ernst, come in.
The band of the Grenadier Guards have assembled to play me out.
But I know this tune.
So you should, Ernst. You heard it often enough when we were visiting here as boys. I recall that both you and Her Majesty preferred it to any music I was able to coax from that bellows over there.
No. But before that, surely it is one of our folk songs?
Yes, it is. It is always the simplest melodies that go straight to the heart. Most of the greater works don't get that far. They remain in the head. Fräulein Schilling, here is a present for you.
Oh, no! I dare not, Your Highness.
Take it, and I myself will undertake to delete it from the inventory. But I advise you only to play it in solitude. Then it will remind you of home, and pleasantly so.
Your Highness is too kind. Too kind.
You may leave us now.
Be good, Johannes. Thank you, Johannes.
She's German.
From Wasserburg.
Wasserburg. We are all three a long way from home, Albert.
Yes, too far. But she's not to be pitied. She's had more than 3 years to get used to it.
It will not take you so long, Albert. 6 months and you will have all but forgotten us.
You believe that of me, Ernst?
Oh, come, I was joking. Of course you will never forget us, but you have a splendid future here. More splendid than either you or I would have thought possible when the birds nested in the woods and covered the home. That time could not last forever, Albert. We had to grow up, take our ways. I shall miss you as much as you miss me, and more.
As much, Ernst, but not more. You will still have Rosenau. You recognize this picture?
Oh, some difficulty. How did it come here?
Victoria put it here. It was her way of trying to cure my homesickness.
So, 'Twas a generous impulse, Albert.
Yes, she's full of generous impulses. Only since we are married am I learning to appreciate them.
You must forget about home, Albert. You cannot look back now. You are no longer a German.
I will always be German.
You can only succeed here if you learn to become an Englishman. Oh, that will be difficult, I know. And your old tutor, Baron Stockmar, knows it too, although he would never admit as much. But you will achieve it, Albert, I know that. And then it is a reality. You will come into your full inheritance as the arbiter of a great nation's policy.
How little you know of the British. You are, Stockmar. Listen. That's the voice of the British. Strident, arrogant, terrifyingly self-assured, you understand? Well, there's no room in it for culture or self-improvement. It says, it roars, we are God's chosen. You are either with us or behind us. Not against us, because nothing opposes us and lives. This we prove by our handling of Bonaparte.
You are not only with them, Albert, you are at their head.
No, Ernst, my dear fellow. I'm perched on the tail of the lion. And it has only to whisk that tail to send me flying.
The tail is not lively enough to dislodge you, Albert. Now, no matter how much self-doubt you have now, the time will come when you will be leading that lion, and I shall be there to see it.
Ah, come in, Baron Stockmar.
Your Highness, your party is ready to leave now, Prince Ernst.
Thank you, Stockmar. Well, God bless you, Albert.
And you, Ernst.
Indeed.
That does not shock you?
No, my prince. It does not even surprise me overmuch.
Not?
You must cease to regard this trivial circumstance as a personal betrayal on your part.
But Her Majesty came to me expecting to be loved as a person, a woman. When I realized that I was incapable of rendering more than mere affection...
Did you anticipate that it would be otherwise?
Oh, with all my heart I did. I prayed that it might be so. Can I not make you understand how wretched this failure makes me? It is gross disloyalty to admit it, even to you.
Nevertheless, it is important that you should discuss it with someone. Is it a physical matter?
No. If it were so, I could accept it unquestioningly. There's nothing amiss with our physical relationship. But surely there should be a degree of intellectual compatibility between man and wife.
Bless you, my prince. Do you suppose that either your royal uncle or myself had any great expectations of Her Majesty's intellectual attainments? But now that your destiny is accomplished, is this so important?
It is important to me, Baron. How is it possible to attain personal happiness under this handicap?
I do not remember that I ever promised you happiness, Your Highness. Satisfaction, yes. Providing that you put your duty before everything. And how should that be difficult after my years of training and seeing who you are?
Who am I, Baron? Tell me.
You are the man with whom the Queen of England is desperately in love, Your Highness. That being so, Her Majesty, being a healthy and very impressionable young woman, it should not take you very long to find the correct formula for both felicity and power.
You imply that I should use my physical ascendancy as a key to power?
Why not?
Is that honorable?
It is your right.
Perhaps. Yet it seems to me to be a shabby, backstairs way to begin a marriage.
Oh, you must cease to regard this marriage as a bourgeois partnership. It was never meant to be, and it can never become so.
Yet it should become so. You have taught me so many things, Baron Stockmar. But this is something I would have preferred not to learn. Let us pursue it no further. Let us shake hands before one of us says something to sour what has been, for me at least, the most rewarding relationship of my life.
Oh, no. You cannot be rid of me as easily as that, Your Highness. The time will come when I can no longer be of service to you. But that time is not yet, I think.
Ever since I was a child, you and my Uncle Leopold behind you determined that I should set out to look for the Holy Grail. Now that I'm started on my quest, do you not owe me more explicit directions? What am I seeking? And if I find it, what shall I do with it?
Only your own conscience can answer those questions, my prince.
Does not seem to me a question of conscience, Baron. We are faced with practical issues, and I must contend with them until the end of my life. How does a young man, armed with nothing but a little book learning, achieve anything in a strange land, among strangers, and with a wife who mistakes the shadow of regal authority for its substance?
Through the acquisition of power.
But I have no power.
I assure you the means of acquiring it.
For whom do you ring?
For the present source of that power. For the Baroness Lytzen.
Lytzen?
You rang, Your Highness?
Inform the Baroness Lytzen that His Highness will receive Mr. Anson at once.
Very good, my lord.
Maitland?
Anson? Anson is the private secretary of Lord Melbourne. I had the greatest difficulty in persuading Her Majesty not to appoint him to that position in my household.
Your Highness must be prepared to yield in this particular.
Appoint Anson as my private secretary? That would be to identify myself for all time with Lord Melbourne's party.
I assure Your Highness that I know what I am about. You will never regret this choice.
Sir?
Mr. Anson, permit me to wish you happiness and success in your enviable appointment to the household of His Highness.
Thank you, sir. No effort will be lacking on my part to render His Highness devoted service.
Then I shall leave you to get acquainted and complete my arrangements to dispatch my heavy luggage by the Dover stage. I will show myself out. There is much to be done and little time to spare.
You're qualified to begin your duties at once, Mr. Anson?
Yes, Your Highness. Her Majesty informed me that Your Highness had expressed an interest in some projected landscape developments on the south aspect of the Great Park. I took the liberty of consulting the Forestry Department yesterday and obtaining these estimates together with a provisional plan. Perhaps Your Highness would care to inspect them at leisure, sir, and later allow me to present you to the architect concerned.
I should like that very much, Mr. Anson.
I'll spread the plan on the table. So, Your Highness would care to inspect the provisional drawings?
Sure. It would appear to be a most ambitious project.
It is indeed, Your Highness.
You have a preference for outdoor life, Mr. Anson?
Whenever my duties permit, Your Highness. With my Lord Melbourne, I spent a very great deal of time in London. That was, of course, unavoidable, as the sittings in the House of Parliament often continue into the small hours.
And very tedious work, no doubt?
Sometimes, almost unbearably so, Your Highness.
Doubtless you sat through the debate relating to the Prince Consort's marriage allowance?
I did indeed, Your Highness.
Have no fear, Anson. I shall not ask you to comment. Ours will be a non-political relationship, I assure you. Indeed, that must be obvious to you already.
With respect, Your Highness, there are a great many matters relating to the royal establishment that stand in desperate need of close personal attention. No doubt Your Highness will occupy himself with matters of that nature.
I look forward to doing so. The question is, where does one begin?
Perhaps with a detailed and critical survey, starting with Windsor, sir.
No, Anson, I think not. One should surely begin by endeavoring to establish confidence among the men with whom one is obliged to work and associate.
Confidence can be established in the right quarters without much difficulty, sir. There is a very trite proverb, but it is apt, I think.
And the proverb?
When in Rome, Your Highness.
I begin to think we shall suit one another very well, Mr. Anson.
I most earnestly hope so, Your Highness. The English reserve is not invulnerable. There is an easy way through to the English governing classes.
And what may that be? You're not going to tell me it's the arts.
Well, an art of a kind, sir. Horsemanship.
Horsemanship?
Even the notorious blackguard is tolerated if he happens to be a first-class steeplechaser.
You ride to hounds yourself, Anson?
Oh, whenever I have the opportunity, sir, but I am only third class, I fear. If Your Highness has a fancy to hunt.
There is a bay gelding in the Windsor stable, 17 hands or thereabouts, with a white blaze on the head.
Oh, Xerxes. Yes, he belonged to the Marquis of Queensbury.
The animal has something of a reputation, I believe.
On New Year's Day, he threw and killed one of Her Majesty's grooms, and has since savaged two others. I believe Xerxes is to be sent back as unmanageable.
You have my personal command to retain that horse on my behalf, Anson.
You wish to buy Xerxes, Your Highness?
Possibly. And you shall accompany me to the last hunt of the season on Tuesday, is it not? The matter is to remain strictly confidential, you understand?
Yes, Your Highness. And these landscape plans, Your Highness?
Well, we will attend to them in due course, Mr. Anson. In the meantime, we must qualify, must we not?
Time, Anson.
5 minutes to 10, Your Highness.
Is it my move?
Yes, Your Highness. Pawn to Queen's Fourth.
And now, Lady Littleton, can you tell me what this picture represents?
It is Conway Castle in Wales, Your Majesty.
Oh.
You are correct. And what can you tell us of this most distinguished edifice?
Your move, Your Highness.
It was built by Edward I in order to consolidate his conquest of the Welsh. It was the scene of King Richard II's surrender to Bolingbroke in 1399. Well done. Who is ahead, Leighton?
You are, Your Majesty, a clear lead of 3 marks.
Baroness?
Oh, I must not take unfair advantage. I have been there.
Have I, Leighton?
No, Your Majesty, I think not. Or if you have, indeed you are too young to take notice.
Your Majesty, it is Melrose Abbey. Correct. So, Your Majesty, this is not fair. None of us is blessed with your remarkable memory. Melrose Abbey stands on the River Tweed. It was the largest of Scottish abbeys and is associated with Sir Walter Scott. It has some remarkable windows and stonework and a number of interesting tombs. It is much visited by tourists. His Highness is asleep.
His Highness has had a very arduous day, Your Majesty.
It is not necessary to make excuses for the Prince, Mr. Anson.
No, ma'am, indeed not, ma'am.
What o'clock is it, Leighton?
It is 4 minutes after 10 o'clock, Your Majesty.
Everybody has our permission to retire.
Your Majesty.
Your Majesty. His Royal Highness also excuses you, Mr. Anson.
Your Majesty.
Something has broken, my dear.
It was the fire tongs. But the entire heavens could have fallen without you being in the least aware of the fact.
So. Ooh. Has everyone gone to bed?
Oh, you were asleep. You snored.
I snored? Oh, that's not remarkable, is it? Many people snore when they are asleep.
Oh.
With respect, I can recall occasions when you have yourself snored. A very gentle snore, it is true. Yet I do not recall resorting to the clash of fire irons in order to waken you.
You are not even ashamed of yourself.
Ashamed?
That you should fall asleep over the chessboard in the presence of the ladies of the bedchamber is bad enough. That you should interrupt me with that uncouth noise is intolerable. I do not recall in the whole of my life having suffered a greater humiliation.
Then you have been singularly fortunate, my dear.
You do not intend to ask my pardon?
No, madam.
Nor to admit that it was a fault?
If it was, it is you who committed it.
I?
It was you who presided over the tedium that caused me to fall asleep.
Albert.
Do not summon the servants, madam.
You are giving orders to the Queen, sir.
I am giving the Queen good advice, ma'am. Would it not help us both if we could take advantage of a rare moment of privacy and talk as man and wife rather than monarch and subject?
We can discuss anything you choose, Albert. Always, you understand. But first, I think it would be a gentlemanly act on your part to ask my pardon.
For sleeping? For the snore? Oh, very well, then. I ask it.
Oh. Oh, my dear, this is childish of us. I was indeed hurt and angry. But I would be far more desolate if we quarreled. Really quarreled. Come, you may kiss me.
Perhaps you will want to withdraw that invitation when you hear what I have to say, Victoria.
But you have already apologized.
That was the price you asked for an audience, my dear.
But that is not an apology at all.
Madam, I do beseech you, let us come straight to the point at issue.
The point at issue is your own boorish conduct, Albert.
No, madam. It is far more complex and arises from the purgatory you oblige me to endure each night in this room.
Purgatory? You mean you do not approve of Leighton and Lady Littleton sharing such privacy as we enjoy? You would prefer us to be quite alone?
You've not begun to understand what I'm trying to say to you.
Indeed, I have not as yet.
You as queen, and I as your consort. We are surely required to set an example, are we not?
Yes.
I am not referring to our conduct in public and our bearing on occasions of state. Then you are a queen indeed. Then I'm proud of you, your graciousness, your simplicity and goodness. It is our private and personal life to which I refer.
You mean our marriage? When we are alone? When I am wholly your wife?
No, not that. How can I make you understand?
Understand what, Albert?
Well, there is a third estate in marriage, my dearest. A marriage such as ours. First, of course, comes our dignity and authority as queen and consort. Then our duty to one another as man and wife, to cherish and comfort one another. Concerning this, no man could ask for more affection and tenderness.
Yet there is a third obligation, you say.
Oh, believe me, there is. It is that part of our life that concerns neither the obligations of state nor the giving and receiving of human love. It is here that we are drifting, Victoria. And if we lose touch one with the other, we can embitter our entire future.
I am stupid, Albert, and when I am alone with you, I am very much aware of my stupidity. It pains me that I cannot understand where I am at fault.
You have failed to recognize in me, your husband, a man of taste and intelligence, with possibilities in excess of those demanded by a guessing game played around the table.
Very well, Albert. We will abandon that particular game. Tomorrow evening, we will have a little music after dinner. And then I will ask Leighton to organize a spelling bee.
Mein Gott!
Albert, really, you must not shout at me in that manner.
You force me to shout. You will not open your mind to what I'm trying to say. Is there no more to marriage than a show of graciousness and dignity in public and ceaseless demonstrations of physical affection in private? Are we to spend all that part of our lives outside the throne room and bedchamber quizzing one another on the relative merits of one pile of ruins or another?
Albert, I command you.
This album. For me, it has become a lexicon of penance, madam, when I think of the vast profit we might derive from these wasted hours. I see this room full of men of intellect and imagination. Writers, reformers, educationalists, inventors, painters, musicians. The best that Europe can offer. We have the key to this world, but you will not use it. You prefer instead this soporific.
Be so good as to pick up that album and replace it on the table where you found it.
I shall not! The servants may remove it with the other rubbish in the morning. Pray God they use it to light the fire.
Oh, I should never have believed it possible that you could have behaved so boorishly. I shall retire now, and you may remain here and reflect upon your conduct. I shall not sleep until you come to me and tell me how truly sorry you are.
I can bear no more. This situation, it is impossible.
Several members of the household are already asleep, Albert.
Indeed, yes. I had forgotten the time.
But that does not mean that you cannot play if you wish. It is our home, not theirs.
That would be very inconsiderate on my part. As you're aware, I've already taken my rest.
Those people you spoke to me about, the writers and inventors, are they men of rank? Are they already at court?
I have the list of their names here in my diary.
Show me. Thank you, Albert.
Every name noted down would enrich the princely houses of Europe, but few of them are seen at any court.
I remember just now, my royal grandfather once invited Mr. Gibbon, the author, here to Windsor. Mr. Gibbon was much pleased and inscribed a copy of his book to my grandfather. It was The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. It is still in the library, I understand.
I must read it. It is a very controversial work, I'm told.
Oh, Albert. Albert. Oh,
my dear. Oh, do not distress yourself so.
But I'm wretched, wretched. I came back to order you to stop playing, but when I saw you sitting there, looking so like the first time you played to Ernst and to me, all anger went from me. Albert, I cannot endure to quarrel with you. Promise me we shall never quarrel again.
That would be to pledge you that it will never rain, never thunder. Quarreling is part of love, Weibchen. We have Schiller's word for it. Ach, dass sie ewig grünen bliebe, die schöne Zeit der ersten Liebe. How's your German tonight?
Ach, dass sie ewig grünen bliebe, die schöne Zeit der ersten Liebe. Oh, me, that love's delicious time.
Might keep the freshness of its prime.
It will. It must. And to prove it, here is your list of guests. You may invite whom you please, when you please. Anson shall write to every one of them tomorrow.
I did not intend that they should descend upon us in cohorts, my dear.
Then we shall make out a roster. We shall have the painters one evening, the inventors the next evening, and so on until the list is exhausted. Then we shall start again at the beginning.
Oh, you're very good to me. Always you're good to me, Weibchen. Oh, come, it is late. The entire household is asleep.
Albert. My dearest Albert.
I expected to find Baron Stockmar with you.
He will be joining me here in a few moments.
Before the review is over?
His Highness the Prince Consort has an appointment with Baron Stockmar when his regiment has been dismissed.
I see. You realize that Baron Stockmar has not yet paid his respects to Her Majesty?
The Baron did not arrive until after Her Majesty had retired last night, Baroness.
So? But it is now almost noon.
I understood from His Highness that Her Majesty was eager to witness the review.
She is watching it now. His Highness' own regiment, the 11th Hussars, make a very fine show, do they not? But perhaps you are not interested in military matters.
I already have more than enough to keep me occupied, Baroness.
Then pray do not allow me to disturb you. I can see everything splendidly from this window.
Baroness.
Yes, Mr. Anson.
Baron, we are not alone.
I see. This is an unexpected pleasure, Baroness. You have been watching His Highness take the salute?
Her Majesty also. She had a number of engagements this morning, but then I informed her that His Highness was reviewing his regiment of hussars, she cancelled them all.
Naturally. The Prince has a great deal of panache on these occasions. But this is not the best vantage point, Baroness. From first-story windows further east, you can look down upon the entire forecourt.
I did not come here for the purpose of watching the review, Baron. I am here to convey Her Majesty's command.
I await this with great respect, madame.
Her Majesty is pleased to inform you that the Queen and His Highness will receive you as soon as the review is over.
Her Majesty is very generous. Perhaps you will inform Her Majesty that I shall be pleased to wait upon her and convey greetings from her royal uncle, that Her Majesty's in Brussels are in excellent health, and trust that she is equally so. And now, my dear Baroness, I have certain letters of great urgency to dictate, and they must be copied by Mr. Anson before the Dover Courier leaves.
In that case, then...
I'm sure you will understand. I shall have the pleasure of meeting you again this evening.
Of that, Baron, you may be very sure.
I'm grateful for your intervention, Baron. I had express instructions from His Highness that he was to see you in private before you were received by Her Majesty.
Well, this was my wish also, Mr. Anson. From the lady's anxiety to watch a review from a bad vantage point, I can only assume that she entertained hopes of sharing her confidence. But perhaps I misjudge her. The Prince would have dismissed her, no doubt.
I do not think His Highness would have disposed of the Baroness so expeditiously.
You mean that His Highness is still wanting in firmness as regards his dealing with the Baroness? Well?
None of us here, least of all His Highness, is under any misapprehension as to the extent of Baroness Letson's influence with Her Majesty, sir.
You're an observant man, Mr. Anson. Also, I see you are extremely loyal and dependable.
Thank you, sir. You would like my report before His Highness is present?
In brief, if you please, Mr. Anson.
I have seen Sir Robert Peel in private on three occasions.
Good. And His Highness has been in personal touch with the leader of the former opposition?
There have already been two private meetings between His Highness and Sir Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Anson. It is now on the stroke of noon. The review ended 5 minutes ago, and His Highness will be coming here straight from the saluting point. I shall meet my prince in precisely 60 seconds.
I was instructed to pass that information to you the moment I met you, Baron. I see now that it is seldom necessary to give you information on anything at all.
We have our sources, Anson. We have our sources.
You wish me to take notes of the interview?
It was my intention. But in view of the observation I forced from you, I have changed my mind. You understand the implication I touched?
Yes, sir. My remark, sir, regarding the Baroness Leighton, I would take it as a great favor.
You are surprised at the extent of my private information, Mr. Anson. I need hardly tell you, the sources at my disposal would soon be dry if I failed to respect every confidence extended to me.
Yes, sir. Naturally. In that case, then, I will get on with my work in the next room.
Oh, Mr. Hudson, I really believe he is afraid of me.
His Royal Highness, the Prince...
Oh, excused, excused.
My friend. My old, old friend.
Why?
You've been home, hmm? You have news of Ernst, of Grandmama... You've been to Rosenau? Oh, come, you must tell me everything.
I can speak of your home in Her Majesty's presence, Your Highness.
You have other news? Bad news?
Your Highness, at the most we have 10 minutes before it is known that we are alone together. Leighton was here when I arrived to keep my appointment with Anson.
Is that remarkable?
No, Your Highness, but I can assure you it was premeditated.
But I wrote to you of Leighton. Our relationship has improved immeasurably. I wrote telling you that I had asserted myself in the matter of our leisure hours, and that Her Majesty has been pleased to indulge my every wish as regards dinner guests. And there's another matter of which you're unaware. The Queen has agreed to the changes in our household when the new ministry takes office.
Yes, this I knew.
Anson has told you of my part in bringing this about.
Anson confirmed what I already knew as regards Your Highness' exercise in diplomacy. Domestic diplomacy, Your Highness.
You're not pleased.
It's the beginning.
The beginning?
Well, it was a good beginning, as indeed was your victory in the matter of banishing round table games after dinner. Let us hope that these skirmishes will prepare you for the major encounter.
You say we shall have but a few moments alone.
Unless I am gravely mistaken, Her Majesty will walk through those doors in less than 5 minutes, and Leighton will accompany her.
If I did not know that your motives were commendable, I could find it in me to tell you that you were presumptuous.
All that, Your Highness, I must not shrink from saying what I feel it necessary to say.
In respect of what, sir?
In respect of Her Majesty's determination to pursue a policy that may bring her throne and yourself into public contempt.
But that is an insult. Whatever you may suppose, I am not hedged around by spies. Neither am I the gilded figurehead I was when I last sought your advice in this room more than a year ago. The advice you gave me then, I acted upon. You must give me credit for something, Baron Stockmar. For growing a little, perhaps. Huh?
You have grown. A little, my prince. But not fast enough. Nor tall enough to grapple with the present situation.
You make light of what I have achieved?
Because you have failed to maintain the offensive. To fill Windsor with men of learning, to persuade duchesses to resign, to establish a civil relationship with Peel. These things are victories of a sort. But sovereignty continues to elude you.
Sovereignty? The Queen's sovereignty? That's just as I thought. You do not understand the difficulties of my situation. When last we spoke of these matters, I implied that Her Majesty was trivial, pleasure-seeking, and wholly unconcerned with matters of state.
I pointed out that her great love for you would enable you to mold her mind.
But what I said was not the truth. Outwardly, Her Majesty would have everyone believe she cares for nothing but social, time-wasting pursuits. Yet underneath is a being who is more jealous of her sovereignty than any monarch in history.
Then you are at least aware of the fact.
Of her determination to exercise absolute power, as she herself conceives her role as sovereign?
By heaven, no, Your Highness. As it is conceived by Lord Melbourne, leader of a discredited party, and to a lesser degree by her ex-governess, Leighton. The Queen no longer stands between you and your destiny. You won that battle long ago by your personal charm and ardor as lover and husband. But Leighton is still proof against you. And also Melbourne, to whom the Queen continues to write for advice on every major matter of policy that is laid before her.
That cannot be so.
Then challenge her. And when you have proved it so, act. What does it profit Peel or any other minister to gain office if Her Majesty takes counsel from an ex-governess and her orders from a man who is terrified of the 19th century? Ach.
Her Majesty the Queen, Lady Littleton, the Baroness Leighton.
Your Majesty.
We should scold you severely, Baron Stockmar. And you too, Your Highness, for had it not been for Leighton's remark that you were already in Windsor, we should have waited all day for news of Uncle, of brother-in-law Duke Ernst,
and for the letters that repose in your portmanteau.
Your Majesty, I was hoping to present them at the audience you have graciously granted this afternoon.
You must not think I am displeased that you should come here straight from your carriage to embrace the prince. We are aware that your greatest happiness is to talk with him, and that he, for his part, has you never out of his mind. Is that not so, Your Highness?
It is always a very great pleasure to confer with Baron Stockmar.
You were in time to witness the final march past by the light cavalry, Baron Stockmar?
I was indeed, ma'am, and I found it most impressive.
You realize the regiment was His Highness' own, the 11th Hussars. And does he not sit a horse splendidly?
His Highness has always excelled in manly outdoor pursuits, Your Majesty.
Yet he did not practice them to the neglect of his studies. His Highness can converse upon almost any subject.
Baron Stockmar is aware of such accomplishments as I possess, Your Majesty.
And he is modest, too, you perceive. Oh, but it is thoughtless of us to detain you after what must have been a long and tedious journey. Touch the bell, Lady Littleton.
Yes, ma'am.
You have our permission to retire, Baron. And we shall expect you at our drawing room after you have rested and eaten luncheon.
You rang, my lady?
Yes, Bates. You will conduct Baron Stockmar to the Lord Steward and inform him that Her Majesty wishes the Baron to be served with luncheon in his suite.
My lady.
Your Majesty is most gracious.
I shall remain here until luncheon is served. But I believe you, Lateson, have urgent correspondence to attend to, and are therefore excused. You too, Lady Littleton. I should be glad if you would make quite certain that the Lord Steward is in personal attendance upon Baron Stockmar. He is getting on in years and must be excessively tired after his long journey.
Your Majesty. Your Majesty.
Oh, did I not manage that very skillfully, dearest? Do you suppose either of them imagined I wanted so much to be alone with you for a few moments? To tell you how proud I was of you this morning?
Oh, Your Majesty is most kind.
Oh, you are tired, my angel. You were afoot soon after 6 this morning, and you did not allow yourself more than a bare 15 minutes over breakfast before you dressed for the review. You must not drive yourself so ruthlessly. I shall speak to Anson about it. Now, come. Sit down by me. There. And let me loosen that gorget. Raise your chin. Albert, you look troubled. Bad news?
No.
But you are plainly upset.
Yes. I am very wretched, Victoria. But it is not on account of Uncle Leopold's earnest endeavors to rule Britain from Brussels.
There is something you wish to tell me.
You were to receive Stockmar at 4 this afternoon. That was the command passed to Anson by Leitzen. Yet Stockmar told me you would come through that door within 5 minutes of my meeting him here. His estimate was accurate. Both you and Leitzen were here within 7 minutes of dismissal on the parade ground.
I came as soon as I learned that Baron Stockmar had arrived.
Leitzen told you he was here?
Yes.
Closeted with me?
Am I to be scolded for interrupting your tete-a-tete? Oh, come, Albert, you are making yourself ridiculous.
No, madam. This time it is not I who caught the ridicule.
I do not care for this mood of yours. I will leave you to recover your good humor.
We had best take this opportunity of confiding in one another. Please do not go, Your Majesty.
I will not tolerate you addressing me in that manner when we are alone. You only do so to provoke me when you are in one of your childishly stupid moods. You will address me by name, Albert. Now, sir, what is behind this exhibition of pique? Why should you resent my wish to share your confidence with Stockmar?
Because it was clearly a conspiratorial act, Victoria.
Conspiratorial?
On Leitzen's part, and by inference, on your part also. But there's something of infinitely greater importance that I wish to discuss with you.
Indeed. What is it?
I think you should know that within the last few days, I've had 2 private meetings with Sir Robert Peel.
With Peel? You received that man into our house?
No, I called upon him at the House of Commons.
Without a word to me? Without consulting me as your wife or sovereign?
You would have gone to any length to prevent it.
Indeed I would. And why not in heaven's name when he has been the author of all our principal difficulties?
All that is behind us, Victoria.
In time it is behind us. But do you imagine I can put it out of mind because it occurred a year ago or 10 years ago? Do you think I can ever tolerate Peel after all he has done to us?
You have no choice but to tolerate him. He is now leader of your government, and as a constitutional sovereign, you are obliged to accept the people's verdict.
Has Stockmar put this treason into your mind?
No, he has not. This treason, as you call it, is the product of a careful study of...
It would be cruel to deny him the task he loves.
You've done this out of compassion for Melbourne?
Not only from compassion. Perhaps because I felt there was no one who truly understood.
So. Then... would seem that I have failed. Let us end this discussion, Weibchen. No good can come of it if what you say comes from your heart.
No, no, Angel, no. You are not involved in this. You are someone apart.
No, Weibchen. That was not our marriage contract as I understood it.
But it is, so it is. You are my husband, my beloved and respected husband. But you are not English, and there are many things that for all your cleverness and application, you can never learn of England. You've tried very hard, and sometimes it has made my heart ache to watch you. But what you are attempting to do is not possible, not even for you. Oh, if only I could make you understand these things.
What things?
The English heart, Albert. Oh, no, not mine, for that you have and will always have. But that of a man like Melbourne, steeped in the English past.
The past? Always the past. No, God in him, I'm not concerned with your country's past, Victoria.
But to understand England...
It's the present and future that I would take a part in shaping. You are queen. Queen, you say. But what do you or your beloved Leitz know of this country's present? You cast a broad-bellied idol, wreath it in green, sit it astride a shire horse and call it England. You put a laurel wreath on its head, and in its fist you thrust a faded standard emblazoned with the battle honors of half-forgotten wars and call it Jumbull, the steadfast, the forthright, the god of merry England and cricket on the green. But that is not your realm, madam. There's a different England under your feet, a dirty, smoke-grimed giant groaning in his sleep, who sprawls across your ugly new towns, loaded with the fetters of ignorance, laziness, greed, and tradition. Shall I tell you of what he dreams, this huge, helpless Prometheus? He dreams of unjust wars in China and Afghanistan, of wheat at 70 shillings a quarter, of the children of the poor working naked in the mines and falling asleep into machines in your manufactories. And he groans aloud because a nation that is equipped to lead the whole world into the light is teetering on the edge of bankruptcy. Because in 1 year, more than 7 millions have been dispersed in poor relief. And because out of every 11 of your Majesty's subjects, one lives and dies a pauper. Now, if this is your England, and you are satisfied with it, then let me depart. Let me return to Rosenau, where I was happy, and let my part in our marriage be limited to the fathering of princes who are to inherit this sham paradise.
You would leave here? Turn your back on me?
I would spend as little time as possible here. For what is there here that I cannot do better in Coburg? A little gardening, a little hunting, and that among people who smile at me. Who are you summoning?
Leitzen,
always Leitzen. I'm not in a mood for Leitzen, madam.
Albert, you must stay, I beg of you.
Your Majesty?
Baroness Leitzen is in the small study. Inform her that her presence is required at once, and she may bring her work with her.
Your Majesty.
I had my say. I do not intend to inflict upon myself the humiliation of witnessing the spectacle of Leitzen engaged in state business.
Nevertheless, you shall stay for 5 minutes more. Then, if you wish, you may pack for your beloved Rosenau. And I will issue an announcement that you are to take a holiday.
Your Majesty's command?
Ah, yes, Leitzen. It was to satisfy myself on various matters we have been discussing with His Highness. You recollect that we are credited with possessing an excellent memory, but it was never at any time equal to yours,
oh,
dear
Leitzen.
Do you happen to know the current price of wheat?
Wheat, Your Majesty?
Wheat per quarter.
I do not know, Your Majesty. I do not recollect that I ever did know, but I have no doubt if your Majesty gave me an opportunity to inquire...
Oh, come, Leitzen. I was confident that you would have such a thing at your fingertips. The question arose when we were discussing the cost of bread in relation to the activities of the Anti-Corn Law League. Could you tell His Highness, for instance, how much public money was expended upon poor law relief last year? Or what proportion of our subjects live and die as paupers?
Forgive me, Your Majesty... But I...
Oh, Leitzen, I see that you cannot. But I can. The gross figure is a little over 7 millions. And the ratio of paupers, 1 in 11, or a little over 9% of the population. Is it not shameful? Does it not go a long way to explaining the unrest in our centers of industry?
Look, Your Majesty summoned me in order to solicit information regarding these matters?
Oh, no. It was another matter altogether. It was to tell you I had had second thoughts regarding the letter we had decided to dispatch to Lord Melbourne by today's courier.
I had not yet finished copying that letter, Your Majesty.
You recollect it was only this morning...
But you have our draft, have you not?
Yes, Your Majesty, I have the draft.
Then you had better return it to me and destroy that portion of it you have already copied.
I brought it with me, Your Majesty. Here it is.
Ah, yes. You know, Albert, one cannot be too careful in these matters. The name of Lord Heytesbury was suggested to me as our minister at the court of Vienna, and I was writing to signify my wholehearted approval of the suggestion. However, since there is no cause for urgency...
Your Majesty has no further instructions regarding a reply to Lord Melbourne's letter?
I shall attend to it later. This evening, perhaps, when Mr. Anson is in attendance. You are excused, Leighton.
Your Majesty.
She will never forgive you.
Oh, she will forgive me. When she is at home and alone with her memories. She will have portraits of me all over the house. And when visitors call upon her, she will point to one of them and say, I had charge of the Queen of England. Until she grew up.
Why? That is what I shall never cease to ask myself. Why? Why?
Why, Albert, dearest, it is why. A round sound with the lips. Oh, it is curious. You speak English perfectly, but for that single defect. And when you are emphatic, out it clips, and you are a German again.
Do you know what Stockmar told me about English women when he was chiding me for my gaucherie?
Mm-hmm.
He said English women were predictable. That if I learned to retreat into etiquette when I was in their company, I would never fall into error.
Stockmar's life has been lived among men, Angel. It was not wise of him to attempt to teach you about women.
Mm. Lord Heytesbury is an excellent choice for that post. It would be wise, I think, to confirm it.
Then confirmation shall be the first act in your new role, Albert.
I am to have a role?
Why, certainly. That of confidential secretary to the Queen.
You must learn not to act so readily upon impulse, my dear.
That is not an impulse. I shall never be clever, Albert. But it is not necessary to be clever to recognize merit when one is honestly served by instinct. Not for a woman who sees no shame in admitting that she is in love with her husband. Oh, yes, I know what you are thinking. That this is a peace offering. That I yield to you in the sense that I yielded regarding our social life. But you are mistaken, Albert. And it is vital that you should understand this at once. I am not a clever person. But this I do know. That it is right to allow conscience to shape one's decisions. And that you are still wiser than anyone about me. What is more, you are resolved to use that wisdom selflessly. It is because I am so certain of this that I am ready to surrender Leighton and Melbourne and commit myself and realm to your judgment.
You will be permitted to do this?
Permitted? I am queen, am I not?
Yes, you are queen. And the man to whom you turn for advice is a German princeling whose country is not as big as one of your counties, who is just 22 years of age, and who is, as yet, pitifully unsure of himself.
Is that the total sum of your misgiving?
It is sufficient to bring us both into disrepute.
No, it is not merely sufficient, though, Albert. For you have the wisdom and I have the authority. And between us we shall keep the secret more securely than I have kept it with Melbourne these 4 years. For we have no need of telltale letters, of couriers and go-betweens. We have free access to one another, and all our decisions can be arrived at in private.
We may not always make the right decisions.
I think we will make more than have been made in the past, Albert. We shall begin now, as soon as luncheon is eaten. We shall retire to the small study and sit side by side with a dispatch box between us. I shall pass each document to you, and you shall make marginal notes, and I will write them down in my own hand, so that historians 100 years hence will say, this goose of a queen had the wisdom of Solomon.
We shall do all this, liebes Frauchen. But not at once, not today. Today you shall cancel all appointments. Today the seals of the dispatch boxes shall not be broken. You will give orders for the cabriolet, but the coachman shall have a holiday. I will be coachman for once and leave the escort behind the hill. Then when there is no loyal citizen about us to lift his hat and shout, God bless your majesty, I will take your hand thus and pledge it thus. And you will understand at last all I've been saying to you in the past. Take this man and use him. His loyalty, his service, his love.
Albert, my dearest angel.
In My Dearest Angel by R.F. Delderfield, adapted for radio by Cynthia Pugh, the part of Queen Victoria was played by Barbara Lee Hunt, and that of Prince Albert by Andrew Sachs. The rest of the cast was as follows. Baroness Lateson, Gladys Spencer, Baron Stockmar, Eric Anderson, George Anson, Robin Lloyd, Viscount Melbourne, John Wise, Lady Littleton, Polly Murch, Prince Ernst, Gabriel Wolfe, Bates, Bruce Gondell, Schilling, Valerie Kirkbright. Production, which was recorded, was by Norman Wright.